Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Balaba Jaya Giri Varadhari Jaya Giri Varadhari Gopi Jana Balaba Jaya Giri Varadhari Jaya Giri Varadhari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana 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 Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Vishnupada Paramahansa Privrajakacharya Tathada Satishishimad is Divine Grishla A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki, his confounder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavarindi Ki, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki, Prem Sega Hostri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Radhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki, श्री राधा कृष्ण गौ गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरी गोव धाम की श्री वृंदावन धाम की श्री मायापुर धाम की गंगा माई की जमुना माई की भक्ति देवी की तुलसी देवी की समबेठा भक्ति वृंद की जायनताय गौर प्रेम All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
16.
Om.
Ityukte.
Yata.
Dharmam.
Upayeme.
Shakuntalam.
Gandharva.
Vidhanaraja
Deshakala
Vidhanavit
Om Ityukte
Yatadharmam
Upayeme Shakuntalam
Gandharva Vidhinaraja Deshakala
Vidhanavit
Om Ityukte Yatadharmam
Upayeme
Shakuntalam
Gandharva Vidhinaraja
Deshakala Vidhanavit Om iti yukte. By reciting the Vedic pranava, invoking the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to witness the marriage. Yathādharmam, exactly according to the principles of religion. Because Narayana becomes the witness in an ordinary religious marriage also. Upayeme, he married Shakuntalam, the girl Shakuntala. Gandharva Vidhina, by the regulative principle of the Gandharvas, without deviation from religious principles. Raja, Maharaj Dushmanta. Desha Kala Vidhanavit, completely aware of the duties according to time, position and objective. Translation. When Shakuntala responded to Maharaj Dushmanta's proposal with silence, the agreement was complete. Then the king, who knew the laws of marriage, immediately married her by chanting the Vedic pranava Omkara, in accordance with the marriage ceremony as performed among the Gandharvas. Purport. The Omkara, pranava, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead represented by letters. Bhagavad Gita says the letters A-U-M, combined together as Om, represent the Supreme Lord. Religious principles are meant to invoke the blessings and mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in Bhagavad Gita that he is personally present in sexual desires that are not contrary to religious principles. The word vidhina means according to religious principles. The association of men and women according to religious principles is allowed in the Vedic culture. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we allow marriage on the basis of religious principles. But the sexual combination of men and women as friends is irreligious and is not allowed. So the aspect that something becomes auspicious because of its connection to the Lord, this remembrance of the Lord, this invoking the Lord, his witnessing, his involvement, this is very important in the Vedic system. As the whole creation is about relationship and reawaking our forgotten relationship with the Lord, right? Relationship we hold on to, but we've forgotten about that relationship with the Lord, so it becomes incomplete. Then because of that incompleteness, instead of turning to Krishna, then we say there's no relationships, everything's just be void. That doesn't work out either for the soul, so again they're back and it just keeps going around like this. So it's only when you recognize the connection of relationships with Krishna, then they take on their natural position, then they actually give happiness to the living entity. Right? Because Krishna is he's rasa, he's the ocean of bliss. The living entity naturally has a particle of that bliss, but the difficulty is, if we're not seeing it in connection to Krishna, that's not nourished. Right? An aspect is there, a small amount. So coming to the material world where the living entity is covered, in that covering, then that we take on that directing these desires towards something material. So that gives misery. Right? That's the point. If you're attached to the material, it will give misery. Right? Then in situations where the misery is a little bit reduced, those situations we call happiness. Right? That's technically how it's working. Right? Because it always says an ocean of misery. It doesn't say an ocean of some miserable, some nice. No, it says an ocean of misery. When that misery goes down, those moments we call happiness. Why? Because the nature of the living entity is bliss. So it's always looking for that situation, that expression. But as we see is that that's only possible or only happens in connection with the Lord. So those in the Vedic culture who actually understand things as they are, they know everything to be successful has to be in connection with the Lord. Therefore, Maharaj Dushmanta here, then he is invoking the marriage ceremony with the Lord as witness, because Om, because then it's complete, because A-U-M, it's Mahavakya, it has the complete aspect of the Lord, his internal potencies, the jivas, the relationships there. And from that, then it's proper. So he knows religious principles, he's taking part in this process, he's not about to do anything irreligious. So then with this, the marriage takes place. So it's they're using the system here of the Gandharvas because of the situation that's there. There's no, you know, no one's there. You won't be able to make big arrangements and all these kind of things. Who's raised her as a, you know, is living in the forest. So the other forms, these big elaborate forms, aren't going to happen. There's no need to kidnap her, he's not going to pay anything for her, and he's not going to be, you know, follow the law of the Paisaj. So that just leaves the Gandharva marriage. So then, in here, then following those principles, then everything's enacted. So the Gandharva, we can see here is why is this in the Bhagavatam? Because we don't see any other Gandharvas getting married, and it's in the Bhagavatam. Because the Gandharvas, they follow this method, but the point is he's remembering the Lord. He's invoking the Lord to witness this arrangement, right? Because you have to have a witness. Otherwise, how do you know what's happened? So he's turning to the Lord. That's why then this aspect is here. And then we'll see also as it goes, it's in the line of the kings, Maharaj will be born like this. So this is important, that it's not against religious principles. That this mutual agreement between the man and the woman, then this principle is a basis for something. Because the principle is there. Men are born to be fathers, women are born to be mothers. That's just how it works. We may have some other ideas and this and that, but factually, that doesn't matter. So that principle is that since you're going to have this closeness, this intimacy, and this intimacy produces children, then it's only to be allowed within this constraint of religious principles. And so that religious position, then that produces quality children. Because the idea is that hogs, donks, camels, and asses, that's going on. We don't have to endeavor for that. That's happening anyway. No arrangements, it's happening. You don't need a nightclub. You don't need online dating. You don't need anything. It's going on. But quality humans, that requires understanding, culture. So here, Dushmanta Maharaj is not interested in anything other than that. Of course, the drive may be desire, but he's willing to see that desire in connection with the Lord. That's what makes it religious. Right? Because the actual purpose is of human beings is to produce God-conscious children. That's what a human being is supposed to produce. And so, therefore, following religious principles then naturally does that. And then as Prabhupada said, that's therefore it's allowed within the Vedas. Then we see an example here, and he said within the Krishna conscious movement, we also follow the same principle of marriage between husband and wife, you know, based on the principle of this religious element. And so that's why he says the sexual combination of men and women as friends, as irreligious, is not allowed. One may say is, no, but that's fanatic. But the point is if we're talking science here, and we're talking what is something's nature, then the whole point is this sexual combination produces children. Unmarried people produce children. The children aren't of great quality. It's just the way it works. Because if it's religious, then you can attract, you know, purified souls. Purified souls aren't going to come to a place that's not purified. Does that make sense? Pure place, pure souls. Impure place, impure souls. It's just natural. Right? Why, if you're walking down the street, a nicely lit street and all that, and then you think about maybe you're a little late, you'll take a shortcut, and you think about you'll go through the alley. But then when you get into the alley, it's dark and everything like that. You decide, well, maybe it's not such a good idea. Okay? Why isn't it a good idea? What will the alley itself do to you? Right? The cement that's on the ground is going to, you know, nibble at your toes, or that garbage bin that's there is going to, you know, come over and bump you in the shoulder, or, you know, what's going to happen? No, because people are in there. They're the ones that's going to create the problem. Right? You don't have to worry that there's going to be a dire wolf there, or, you know, an armadillo that's, you know, that just like completely rabid about humans. No, it's not going to happen. It's humans are in there. So that's the whole point. On the lit street, there's one group. In that dark alley, there's another group. So that's the point. Clean place, pure people. Not clean place, impure people. It's a very simple science. No fanaticism, no, well, that's sentiment, or that's archaic. It works today. That's just how it functions. So, since the principle is that, it's about uplifting yourself and society. Therefore, then, people within the society are careful about that. It doesn't mean that there's not sexual activities. It just means that it's only within a purified environment. That's all. That's all that's mentioned. So, we see here is that so does that make sense? So friends, therefore, it's not going to be in this state. What will be the drive for it? Only lust. Right? While if you have husband and wife, then that lust will be the drive, but it's religious. They'll have a proper child. Because it doesn't matter about you. We're not the ones that arrange the things in the universe. Right? Does that make sense? If it's based on lust without religion, then lust is the basis. You attract the souls that are lusty. If it's based on religious principles, one may have that desire, that drive, but that's why one is involved in the process. Right? Like process requires a particular inspiration. You know, does that make sense? You're hungry, you cook. You're tired, you sleep. You do something because of that. So having the children, but because of the religious basis, that brings about religious children. Right? Does that make sense? That's just the way Krishna created it. It doesn't matter who you are, who you think you are. It's not going to be any different. Krishna made it. Right? So that's then why Prabhupada saying is we also in our society follow this, because we want to be Krishna conscious. So it's a simple point. So here is that invoking the Lord, then as witness, then it becomes auspicious, then as husband and wife, then they can, move forward with their relationship. Right? As we see, then that will be the next position. Okay? So any comments or questions or doubts or other varieties of grumpiness, or no? We're all good. It's a topic everyone's really familiar with. Yes. Yes, yes. Over. Mike is coming. Slowly, but surely.
We are reading about Rupa Goswami. He had a, I think it was Rupa Goswami, he left home to go join Lord Chaitanya and dumped his teenage bride, who had to spend the rest of her life as a widow, I guess. And then also we know that Jayananda, who is certified as going back to Godhead in one lifetime, now we celebrate his birthday as a holiday because Prabhupada said he was a pure devotee. His wife divorced him because she thought him to be pretty much useless as a husband. So how is it that sometimes we see people becoming pure devotees, satisfying Krishna and all the previous acharyas, but without making their wives happy? How do they get away with that?
I don't catch the oxymoron here.
Well, that they can go back to Godhead without satisfying their family members, their wife.
But I'm still don't. It's still not clear, this oxymoron. You're making a statement that it's actually possible to satisfy wives, and then trying to connect that to Krishna consciousness as a basis. I don't understand.
Yeah.
So you've never been married then?
Actually, twice.
Okay. So the principle is that in 11th canto, then Pingala, you know, who technically has been married thousands of times, she makes the point is there's never been in history, and we're talking about day one of Brahma's day till today, that any man has ever satisfied a woman. It's not possible. Means the man gives it his best shot, and because he's giving it his best shot and putting in his best effort, the woman is pleased with that. But as far as actually taking care of everything she would like, it's never going to happen. It just won't happen. So there's no such thing as pleasing the woman and then moving on. Because it's impossible. Does that make sense? So that's one thing, just to start off the discussion, because what we're saying is that basically, how can you, unless you please the wife, how can you move on to these other aspects? So just point, that's not possible at all. It's never going to happen. Never has, never will. Second point is, since when does karma is the basis of bhakti? Since when is good work the cause of devotional service to the Lord? Right? Because bhakti is independent. It doesn't have anything to do with that. If it had to do with that, then how do Mileshas and Yavanas take up bhakti and go back to Godhead? Because if it's based on karma, where's the good karma? Where? What? You know what I'm saying? So it's independent. We have to know that bhakti does not depend upon previous pious or impious activities. It's unaffected by either. Be second point. Then third point is the material world, is the jiva supposed to be here? Right? Is the jiva supposed to be in the material world? Or is it supposed to be in the spiritual world? Where's the natural position for the jiva? In the spiritual world. So therefore, Okay, some people in there in their 50s, 60s, they've learned something. Generally, that marriage, when they get married in their 50s or 60s, generally goes pretty good. It lasts. Could also have something to do with the guy dies during that time. You know, it's not long enough for it to really fall apart. You know, but learn something. You know, become a little more humble, a little more considerate. You know, he's too old to really get too fired up about it. You know, so it works. But the whole point is the Vedic concept is if you're trained, why not from the very beginning, one can deal really properly. And then, like we see, Maharaj Yayati and his wife Devayani, that they come to the point as, yeah, there is nothing here. And then they go back to Godhead. But if we make it about social issues, it will never be centered, because how much is there? The guy leaves the girl, okay, bad. But if the girl leaves the guy, that's socially acceptable nowadays. That's cool. The guy leaves the girl, he's got to pay alimony. The girl leaves the guy, nothing. She walks out clean. Right? So then, is it about Krishna? Or is it about this foolish concept that material desire actually can be? It will never work. It will never work. It's just not working. You just have to look around to see. It doesn't take a lot, right? It means if we had it learned by hearing, right, from the Shastra, then we can learn by seeing. All you have to do is look at the community and see how well it's going. Right? And then, of course, if that doesn't work, there's the third option. When it happens to you, then, okay, hopefully you learn that. And if you do, then great. The point is to learn. The concept is learn. So whether you learn by the first, second, or third class method, it doesn't matter as long as you learn. But if one doesn't learn, now that's a disadvantage. That's a problem. It's just a matter of the reason first class is mentioned as first class, second, and third is that first class is the least trouble. You hear about it, you contemplate it, and go, okay. The second is, as you see and all that, you might get emotionally affected by it, but then you learn. You don't have to get involved. The third, you have to get involved. So the most amount of emotions and suffering is there. But if you learn, it's good. So all it is just which is the simplest, most straightforward. That's all. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful that what's the Krishna conscious point of that whole thing? You know? How is it working? How is this? What is the Krishna? I mean, it's the actual technical. Since people bring up these technical social points, so technically, how does it connect to Krishna? I mean, sentimentally you connect it, but sentimentally you can connect anything. Right? So there has to be a logic. Does that make sense? You know, I reject the Veda because it's not practical. At the same time, I accept these modern emotional constructs that are totally impractical, and I'll accept those, but I won't accept the Vedic, which actually is practical. Because in the one, I just do whatever I want. I don't get any results, but I get to do whatever I want. In the Vedic, I am restricted. So because I'm restricted, then in my mind, that can't be pleasing, because only doing whatever you want, that's pleasing. And doing something that regulates, you know, is not pleasing. Therefore, even though it regulates and therefore gives the results later and the results are better, I don't have faith in that because I'm working on the, you know, nanosecond, you know, how you say, overturn of my effort and result. Does that make sense? And if I'm not in control, I can't trust anyone else as if I'm actually in control. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be very, very careful that we, as individuals, don't take up these perspectives because they will never give us any satisfaction. They won't help in Krishna consciousness. They won't help socially. Say whatever you want. Oh, things are improved. But look at it. Are they? Are they? Realistically. So that's the whole thing. That's why that Krishna gave the Vedic system, the Varnashram system. That's why Prabhupada's recommended it, the Acharyas have recommended it, because it's as good as you'll get. It's not perfect, but it's as good as you can get. You can't get better than that. People have their theories, but they've never worked. Anything they're doing today has already been applied before. Anything they're doing today is not new at all. They're thinking that it's new, but it's not. It really isn't. That's the thing, is everyone, oh, I'm so different, I'm so unique, and what I think, and what me doing, and my friends, it's different, it's never been done before, therefore, we have to come up with something new for it. It's the same old chewing the chew. Nothing new. And because of that, it hasn't worked. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. We have to have that faith, that bhakti is the thing that if you're performing bhakti, all other aspects are contained within that. And when you have that faith, then you get rid of the anartas, where one has faith in the material world and material processes. Then one becomes situated nicely in Krishna consciousness. That gives you a taste, and that taste drives you forward to bhava, which takes you to prema. But these social issues, they don't even give mundane satisfaction, let alone anything spiritual. Does that make sense? Right? Because we see here, it's religious principles. I thought. Is that okay? Does that work? Okay. Good. Yes.
Man bhakti is the basis of bhakti.
I think that thing over there is the thing that's making the trouble.
But is there any relationship between our karma and our devotional life?
Is there any relation between our karma and devotional life?
Can they affect us adversely or...
Is any connection meaning based on... Do you mean that by our karma we're able to be nicely engaged in devotion, and by if it's good and it's bad then we're not? Can jnana and karma affect our spiritual lives? It can't affect bhakti. It can affect us, but it can't affect bhakti. Bhakti is independent, right? So our karma has nothing to do with how we progress in Krishna consciousness. Karma regulates the situations you're in. It doesn't regulate Krishna consciousness because it's outside of that purview. Does that make sense? Like that. It's just like, let's say, there's a village. All right? And the village has its little local governance. Right? The senior members of the community, they get together, make decisions, and stuff like that. Okay? Now let us say, on the state level, then one of those government officials comes. Is he controlled by that village? No. He's beyond, he's outside, the village has zero control or effect on. But what that state level authority does affects the village. That's bhakti. Bhakti is on the universal level, and the modes of nature are what's happening within this universe. So they have no connection to each other. As long as we think there's a connection, then we'll always be bewildered. But it has nothing to do with it. Right? So that's why good birth, knowledge, all these things have zero effect on you being Krishna conscious or not. Because it was by good birth, wouldn't all the smartas in India therefore be nice devotees? right? Nice Brahmin birth. But why aren't they devotees? Why do they call themselves smartas and not bhaktas? Because it doesn't. Are all the people that have PhDs, they're all, you know, all right there, they're all the devotees? What about all the beautiful people? What about all those who are, you know, legally, really solidly situated, no one can disturb them at all? Are they all devotees? Right? What about all the wealthy people? The wealthier they are, the greater they are as devotees, right? Isn't it? You know, like our top devotees, you know, the... Is it the, how do you say that? The, I can't remember, but, you know, all these trillionaires, they're all like, you know, they're all Uttamadikaris, and the billionaires are all, you know, nicely situated, advanced Madhyamadikaris, and the millionaires, and they're doing all right. They're, you know, kind of steady and stable, and then, right? So that's the whole point. It has no distinction. Someone's in a good situation, they're becoming a devotee. Someone else is in a good same situation, not becoming a devotee. Someone's in a really bad situation, they're becoming a devotee. Someone else in the same situation, they're not. Someone's becoming a devotee in their own home place, someone else is becoming in a foreign place. And vice versa, that they're not. So, where's the connection between them? It has nothing to do with it. Remember, karma is situations you're in, the soul. It has nothing to do with what you, the soul, do. Right? That's the meaning of free will. Free will, you can do what you want whenever you want. You can say, no, but I'm forced by circumstances. That's because you want a particular result. But others in the same circumstance do something else. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Very good. Yes.
Hello.
Leave it off. Just turn it off, please. Right? It means be sensitive. One, people freak out. Now the baby started crying. As soon as you heard the baby crying, you know it's too much. You turn it off. You don't keep going because you have something to say. Yes, we already said that. We said that also. Yes,
we said that too.
So if that's not, if the vegetative children are not there, the universe will not advance further.
And who said the universe, who said we're going to stop having children and the universe isn't going to go
forward? Who said that? Where? Who said that? Yes, but who means you're bringing up a doubt that unless humans have sex, the universe will stop functioning, and that's a bad thing, right? You're taking that as a bad thing. So where did I ever say, or the Bhagavatam ever say, that humans should not have sex? Where does it say? It means first give your evidence that sex is not allowed according to the Vedic literature, and I fully concurred with that. Otherwise, why bring up a doubt that we didn't even discuss, especially when I made the point about having sex and what's the benefits of proper sex and religious and what happens if you follow irreligious sex. Why would this doubt come up? And if that's so important, why is it that all these human beings aren't having sex and actually getting anywhere with it? You know what I'm saying? You go around and ask, go out on the street, just take a mic, go out on the street and go, you know, excuse me, you know, we're doing a survey here, and are you having enough sex that's, you know, making the universe go on? Do you feel you're really, like, getting the amount of sex that you as an individual deserve? And then what are you going to hear him say? Right? And it has nothing to do with us. We're not telling out there, and the guy in the corner, and as soon as he says, and we look at him, you know, well, you know, so you said something, no, I'm okay. You understand? Who's stopping the people of the world from having sex? We're not. So therefore, then why bring this up? What will be the point of it? Yes, everybody should have sex.
And therefore, then the universe goes on, and that's a glorious thing. What philosophy is this? What's our goal here? How does that relate with the soul? How does that relate with Krishna? How does that even relate to the material nature and actually the possibilities of having sex? Right? And how is this a sadhana, and how will this will give you love of Godhead? Because if it gave you love of Godhead, then Osho would have been a pure devotee. Yeah. But it didn't work. And it's being so liberal, right? Being so liberal and all that and moderate, he got his backside kicked out of Oregon in America. It's the most liberal state in America. And he got his butt kicked out. So maybe you should rethink this philosophy. Right? Religious principles, it says men and women as friends, they don't have sex. Because then what's the point? It's just lust. Lust will just beget a child that all he has as his, you know, central quality is lust. And how do you know that they match? You can have friends in a wide range of people that actually aren't meant to be partners. So that means your means, you know, you can have natures that are so different that not only is it going to be lusty, the child, but it's not even going to be able to figure out who it is as an individual because the nature of the mother and father are so different. And so what... how that is going to make the universe go on nicely. Right? Shiva was having plenty of sex, populated the universe, and they start destroying the universe. And Brahma said, okay, cool, great, no, we're good. You know, you don't need to make any more kids. So how is it making a world full of Varnashankara is somehow or another going to maintain and cultivate the universe and bring it forward to that blessed state that everybody's, you know, putting the daffodils in their hair and doing, you know, circle dancing on the, you know, side of the hill with the sun out and the rainbow and the butterflies. And someone playing harp and someone playing ocarina. Yeah, I think we got it. Bonfire. Need a bonfire. Yeah, need a bonfire. Okay? So how is that going to work? So in other words, think about what's being said here. The point here is that religious principles, human life functions according to religious principles, but that's still not enough. Religious principles have to be connected to Krishna. So when these religious principles get connected to Krishna, now it becomes perfect. Now humans actually attain their position as humans. Otherwise, before that, they have human form, but they tend to act like animals. So unless the consciousness comes to the point where it starts to, you know, the petals start to open, that it's blooming, it's not actually human life. Right? So even if they have all the religion, they follow all the religion like we were discussing before, even the smartest, they have all the religion. But it's not coming to perfection because it's not awakening their concept of their relationship with Krishna. So even though they're now, you could say, at the bottom level of human life, it won't go any farther. And it will end up coming back around the cycle and be back down in the animals. Only when you go forward where the consciousness then it starts to bloom. Right? That's then the point. And then you're trying to get to where it fully blossoms. Right? So that's bhava and prema. But if it's not blooming, then what's the point of human life? Right? Because everybody else is having sex. You're talking about sex, I mean, then we should fill the universe up with pigeons, right? Because they have, Prabhupada said, sex 90 times a day. I mean, that outclasses anyone. Even Casanova cannot beat that one. I mean, literally. Him, a whole nunnery full of nuns, he still can't get in that many. So then, pigeons, the glory of the universe. Right?
We're good? Means that leaving the family, the point is to be in a Krishna conscious situation. See, as we take it, either you're totally with the family and totally attached and just having sex, or totally not into the family, not having a sex and walking out the door. What about being Krishna conscious? If you're having children, why can't you be Krishna conscious? Right? If you're raising children, why can't you be Krishna conscious? If that situation is favorable, then you're Krishna conscious. Means we look at, okay, Prabhupada left, okay. But if we look at the history, did he try to involve his family in that process? When he went to Jhansi, he hadn't taken sannyas, he was a vanaprastha. He wanted the family to be involved. How to be Krishna conscious? His son could run the business, right? That would take care of the wife and everybody else, and then he could focus on the preaching. And that way then they're all getting benefit because they're supporting that. And then, you know, they have their interaction. He can, you know, they may visit him, he might visit them. But they didn't go for it. They just wanted him to do it. And they'll sit back and do nothing. So then it's not favorable. He can't preach. They're not going to be Krishna conscious. So staying in that environment, what's the point? Right? Does that make sense? But you see others, where husband and wife, then they're Krishna conscious, they can move forward. Like that, then going out together works. Right? Dhritarashtra, his wife, they went to the forest. The Pandavas, their wife, they went to the forest. So the point is that up to 50 is, the idea is at 50 you should stop trying to expand family life. That's just it. After 50, you just maintain it. Means after 25, 30 years, you can pretty much figure out what works and what doesn't, what you need, what you don't need, what you eat, what you don't eat, what you wear, what you don't wear, how many times a week you go out, how many times a week you don't go out, who sleeps on which side of the bed, who uses the bathroom, who has to take their stuff out of the bathroom, who leaves their stuff in the bathroom. You know, who's supposed to pick up their socks off the floor? You figure that out. Right? So therefore, then, now that all that's figured out, there's no mental thing. You can just, all that time that you were in anxiety about that is, you know, did she care, did she not care, did she get upset, not that, you don't have that anymore. You can spend all that time being Krishna conscious. Because anyway, in that day, you'll spend X amount of time, actually nice, pleasant interaction, and then the rest of the time in anxiety, right? That's called household life. Now that pleasant interaction, that remains, and all that anxiety, that becomes the time for being Krishna conscious. Either you're doing sadhana, you're doing some service, discussing together with your wife about the service, so you're increasing that. It's actually, they do better. They have more interaction. Right? And so if that's there, why it's not a problem. Vanaprastha is a terminal ashram. You leave your body as a vanaprastha, it's not considered unglorious. Right? So that's it. That's all it is there. But if it's not favorable, then it's there. And whether they're always together, sometimes not, that's up to the individual. That's the whole point. Vanaprastha offers is so individual. It has the widest range of options. Sannyasi is pretty much fixed, brahmachari is pretty much fixed, and grihastha is pretty much fixed. But vanaprastha has the widest range of options on how much you're together and how much you're not. Right? But if we're always going to look at everything in black and white, then we're always going to be socially dysfunctional. We have to understand their shades. Then it will work very nice. Does that make sense? But the point is all that's to become Krishna conscious. You do everything perfect, you don't become Krishna conscious, what is the gain? Right? Because in any case, even if we look at the example, Rupa Goswami goes out of the house like that, and his wife is there, she does her duties there,
and then both of them go back to Godhead. Well, by the modern, he stayed in the house, didn't become Krishna conscious, neither of them go back to Godhead. Right? None of you say, no, but they're Krishna conscious, and that's what I've been saying all along. We have to give up the black and white concept. Does that make sense? Okay. Chai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.